Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Morning Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go in there?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good. I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Well, good morning, everyone. Just showing you some of the headlines of the iMessenger Media publications, three publications, iMessenger Media, which is an online publication, Texas Metro News, and the Garland Journal, both print publications by iMessenger Media under the publisher Cheryl Smith. And we know she has a long and successful media career, not only here in Dallas, but in various other cities. I'm Norma Adams-Wade, your host, and you're watching I Was Just Thinking. Let me explain my mask, and I'm going to go ahead and take it off. I wear it as a reminder to you that we're still under the national health directives. When we enter certain retail or public locations, we are to mask up. And I want to honor that. So I wear the mask just to kind of remind us. But since I'm here in a room alone, I'm going to go ahead and take it off. But when I go back out into the public, I will put my mask back on. Let's see, what else do I need to tell you today? I'm just really uplifted that we've been having some very, very accomplished and admirable guests. And today we've got two guests, one the first hour and another the second hour, very outstanding individuals. I'm going to go ahead and bring in our current guest and introduce you to her. And let's see if you can even recognize who she is. This is Isis Brantley. Can you hear me? I can't hear you. Let's see if we can get this adjusted. She said she could hear me, but there we go. There we go. Hello, hello. How in the world are you doing, beautiful? I'm even better now that we're getting the chance to talk. And I got to tell you right quick, you always you inspire people to be in your presence because you bring in a little sunshine every time. I don't know what kind of mood you wake up in, but when you meet public, you bring the sunshine with you. So let me tell everybody a little bit about you before we begin our conversation. And Isis, she's known as Isis. She is what is known as a natural hair braiding guru. Now, I'm going to say guru. She's a pioneer in that area, and her story has been told nationally about a 20-year lawsuit that she spearheaded, which finally allowed hair braiders to be independent from all of those red tape rules that cosmetologists have to undergo. And while she was fighting that battle, she literally was in her shop braiding. Law officers showed up, handcuffed her, arrested her, took her, whisked her away because she, under Texas law or state law, was braiding without a license, and they were determined they were going to make it happen. But here she is. She's got a just a victorious story to tell. And so I'm going to go ahead and jump right in with my question, Isis. And as I said, now you've been our guest, I know at least once, maybe twice before, but this time we have a different topic that we want to talk about. Today we want to talk about the work that you've done with clients who have alopecia. Now I'm going to turn the mic over to you. Tell us what that is and just kind of bring us into this scenario of you working with clients who have alopecia. All right.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I love all of you. I love everything that you're doing, Madam Normal Way. Earl Smith, you know my love is deep for you. I've been for ancestral braiding, meaning that I have a system of healing through the hair.
Okay.
So a lot of people know from the past, the last past 25 years, I've helped women with eczema. I've helped women with lupus. I've helped women with dandruff, excessive dandruff. I have helped women with seborrhea, psoriasis, and they have gone to dermatologists and got diagnosis to do certain things.
Okay.
But once I gave them the natural rhythm of working your strands and understanding that everything comes out of the scalp. Everything, the skin is the largest elimination organ, so everything comes out. So whatever you're putting into your blood, you will see it on top of your scalp or on your skin or on your face.
Okay.
So I created a product that helps people with the eczema, like children that were born with seborrhea, that were already born with eczema. They had cradle cap, things like that.
Yeah.
So I would use these natural oils to put directly on the issue. If it was dandruff, we would use the tea tree, the rosemary, the peppermint. We would saturate here with lemons and oranges just to kind of stimulate the follicles so that the energy that we're putting on the scalp, the nutrients that we're putting on the scalp would seep into the bloodstream.
Okay.
I had a lot of these women to come and their hair was totally gone.
Yeah.
One of the alopecia ladies I wrote in my book and dedicated my book, Stolen Crown, I dedicated to her, Chandra Luke, Ibadarata. But anyway, she was not wanting to live anymore. She committed suicide because licensed cosmetologists had taken out her crown, all the hair out of her crown. Tract alopecia will not come back as easily as alopecia areata. Traction alopecia is what I see in the industry.
Okay, now let me jump in because see that's an eye-opening thing right there. You're telling the public and myself, so there are different kinds or is it just those two? Tell us a little bit more about that.
How many different kinds?
Is that right?
Hair and pull their hair out constantly. A baby as a young adolescent, they keep doing it through their adults. And end up going there completely. So I'm talking about traction alopecia, which is running rampant in the industry.
Okay.
It is the alopecia that started this one lady who committed suicide.
Yeah.
Started hair falling out. He would relax it and glue it every month. Relax it and glue it every month for 6 months.
Yeah,
so she had no hair at the top of her crown.
Right.
So these women that come with a little alopecia, I saw what happened to Jada Pinkett. I see her with the braids, and I could see how heavy the braids, the amount of hair that we put on top of our strands is so important.
Okay, hold on. Let me jump in right there. Now, I know everybody in the public by now should be familiar with the name Jada Pinkett. Now we know that she is the wife of Will Smith and she has her own acting career. Both she and Will Smith are very accomplished and she does this show Red Table Talk and has different guests on. But then what I forget about how recently it was, I'm going to say within the last maybe year, we in the public learned that she was having a hair problem and she was loose. And I remember turning on one of her shows where she wore the wrap over her head and all like that. So anyway, you're telling, go ahead and pick up with that about what you were saying about Jada Pickett.
When I see these styles, that these stylists, I call them the hair abusers. They don't even know that they are hair abusers. Mm. But when you put this synthetic fiber that's mixed with a lot of it's fiberglass mixed in it, a lot of purple mixed in it, it cuts the strands of your hair.
Okay.
So when you wear styles for your film or for, you know, your job, or if you're just going, you know, on a vacation or whatever, you have to be careful about the condition that your hair is already in.
Okay.
So you can't put extensions on your hair for 10 years and not expect some type of alopecia.
Right.
People will not do that.
Okay.
But even the crocheting, the faux locks, even locks from the root.
Huh.
And I've seen a lot of alopecia in my practice with people who wear heavy locks.
Okay.
That it pulls on the roots
of
their scalp, and then it comes out. And sometimes it comes back and sometimes it doesn't. But I know that Jada, she could work with the porosity of her hair. That's the thing that we're extending. And massage her scalp and feed her scalp everything that we are told to put in our blood.
Okay.
Nettles, dandelion.
Okay, now let me jump in about the blood. And I heard you mention earlier, if I heard you correctly, I think you said the skin is the largest organ on the body.
Yes.
And then you said something about our blood. Now, you know, we don't walk around thinking about our hair and our blood, but tell us more about that.
It's one. In my school, I teach about the structure. Most people don't know the structure of hair, and most of us even understand the composition of hair.
Uh-huh.
So when we understand the structure of hair, we know that there are two parts. There's the hair root, and there's the hair shaft.
Okay.
So we have to learn about all of this. Our hair is connected to the spirit of our soul. It's spread over the five minerals in our hair. I believe our hair, because it spirals like our DNA and like everything in the universe, and because our pineal gland is 88% more active, it helps to regulate our eating habits, our hormones, our emotional energy, our anxiety. And when we don't look at that, we take a risk of hurting our blood. And our blood can do anything but excrete whatever it is that you are putting in it. So if you put in a lot of sugar in your blood, the blood is going to bring the sugar to the skin.
Wow.
Fast foods, a lot of, you know, processed foods and things like that in your blood. Especially when you see that you're already dealing with some dandruff issues.
Yeah, yeah.
Those issues, you have to get off the sugar. You have to get off the milk, the cheese, the pizzas, the fast food. All that will help to balance your hormones. It will balance your nervous system.
Okay, now I got to jump in. Okay. Wow. I mean, you have retained to me an encyclopedia within yourself of this. I want to know, okay, there's young Isis as a young, I'm going to say even a preteen running around, and you were born in Dallas. So when did it occur to you to start researching and learning about and exploring all of this, and what kind of journey did you go on to get to where you are now with all of this knowledge?
Oh my God, that is such a beautiful question. I got chills. When I started having my children, I started to go through some form of alopecia, which was areata, that was dealing with my blood system and my nervous system, and my immune system was just totally compromised.
Okay.
When I met Dick Gregory is the one that told me to stop drinking so much carrot juice. So this is my journey, my holistic dietary journey that I was creating and putting as a part of my spiritual journey. So I combined the two. And he said, get off the carrot juice, let go of all the chicken, the fish, the meat for a while, just release all of that. Because I was only doing chicken and fish. But when he told me to get rid of chicken, I was like, oh my God, so I have to let chicken. And I had to change my diet to a more alkaline diet. So he had me eating all these vegetables and doing all these different smoothies. And that helped me to understand. Also, one thing I think expecting mothers when they go in to have their babies. It's the same thing that I did. I put extensions on my hair.
Okay.
And it spotted my hair out. Like, it totally, because I had cesareans, five cesareans.
Wait, say that again now. Say that again.
I had five cesareans.
Oh, cesareans. Okay, I got you.
The medication and the extensions did not mesh well.
Okay.
So I see a lot of hair loss with the way that I was doing and preparing my process for bringing in a new human.
Okay.
You know how we do. I just want to cover my hair because I don't want to mess with it. And sometimes when we cover our hair, even when we are wearing our galas, our head wraps, or when we wear our wigs, or when we wear any type of hats or things like that, we're still compromising our follicles and ourselves.
Wow.
So I just shifted and started doing research on my own about what did I eat last night?
Yeah.
Oh, I had some cookies. Oh, I drank some soda. I had the apple juice out of Kroger until I realized that these things were causing an adverse effect.
Yeah.
So that's what happened with me. I just started asking my clients when they come in, what happened? What do you do?
Right.
What do you eat? What you like to grow your follicles? Do you understand where you're losing your hair is where your gut is?
Yeah.
Where your gut, the top of your head is connected to your gut. The part around the edges where we lose our hair from too tight braiding or any type of abusive technique.
Yeah.
We lose the queen in your bladder. The back of your neck, right in the back of your neck, we call it the nape of the neck. That's your liver. So I had them to do.
Wow.
How can we feed the colon? What do we need to do? Oh, you need more, you know, psyllium. You need more psyllium root. You need more wormwood. You need to make sure that you're doing your chlorophyll, your acidophilus, those things, your digestive enzymes. And one of the things that I know that will grow your hair instantly is an enzyme that we don't really, amino acids that we don't really even think about. Amino acids are excellent for growing your hair. And
okay.
I have a lot of different herbs that will help to stimulate the scalp too and make your hair grow.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Now you're telling us that when your clients come in and you're sitting there working with their hair, and you're having these conversations with them about what's going in, what are you eating, what are you putting into your body. I'm wondering, are you seeing there, well, let me ask it this way. Are you seeing that there is an increase in the alopecia hair loss thing, or is it that it's been there all along and it's just gotten more public media exposure? What are you noticing?
That it's gotten more public media exposure because it's always been there. Most of the black women in the community, they all wore wigs.
Right.
So all the women got wigs on because they don't have hair.
Now we're
paying attention right now because it is your diet. It's everything that we are stressing over. It's problems. It's your emotion. It's your hormones. It's how you eat. It's what you're drinking. It's all of those things. And if we just look at those things little by little, one by one, and start to remove them, people have gotten better in my chair. They have gotten rid of eczema. They have gotten rid of seborrhea. My cousin, she eventually died of leukosis. But we brought all her hair back to me to feed the scalp. Just like you feed your body, you take the sea moss and you feed your scalp.
Okay, now let me ask you this. I've known a number, well, not a number, but a well enough amount of people who say they have lupus. I didn't realize that hair loss went along with lupus. Is that an automatic thing or what?
Autoimmune dysfunction. Your immune system has been compromised.
Okay.
Autoimmune is just put all the Mother Earth back into our bloodstream and change the way we're feeding our temples.
Okay.
We don't even touch our scalp.
Yeah, okay.
If you find a scalp that's solid and hard, there's no blood circulation.
Okay.
I realize that we have to start loving our scalp and our head because that's our God.
Let me repeat that. I heard you say We have to start loving our scalp. Oh, my gosh. What a thought. What a thought. What a thought. Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. So, the average person who the light bulb begins to come on in their head, like you said with you when you started having your children and your light bulb kind of came on, what would be step one? Tell the public, the listeners, the audience, what is step one when you begin to realize that maybe you're facing this situation?
Step one is healing through the hair.
Okay.
Your hair are your antennas.
Okay.
Your hair is your garden. How you feed it is very important. That's step one, is to realize that what we're doing in the industry of natural, healthy, wholesome, vitality, full of perfusion and big hair.
Okay.
We are getting to know that hair, because that hair has been totally removed from, society.
Okay.
So, yes, the social programming that we have gone through with our hair has not been good.
Okay.
Loving your hair, healing through your hair, paying attention to your hair, like you do your garden. If you are
want
to grow, that's what you have to do. You got to give that energy to your head.
Okay.
Because that's everything lives, the negative bacteria, the fungus, the mucus, the thoughts, all the anxiety, everything lives here.
Okay, so that's step one. Now take us on to maybe three steps.
So step two would be to find a good stylist or an educated stylist that's culturally educated.
Okay, I got to jump in. I'm so glad you said that, because I'm sitting here thinking, okay, if I'm the average person, I kind of would be scared to kind of take this on along. But I'm so grateful you said find a good stylist. What kind of stylist? Go on.
A cultural stylist.
Cultural.
A stylist educated and set.
Okay.
The difference when we think of hair as being the same as Asians and Europeans.
Okay.
We only have afro hair. They're the only people on the planet that have afro hair. So that's the three different types of hair.
Okay.
We have to know that hair again. We have to start asking questions. We have to eat for our beauty. We have to eat for our hair. We have to eat the right food.
Okay. Would that be a step? The eating part. Would you list that as a step? Okay. You find us. Okay. Step one. Pay attention. Step two. You've got to find a cultural stylist. Now step three.
In that cultural stylist, he will understand eating for your beauty.
Ah, okay.
Touch the strands with love.
Okay.
Treat the hair with a lot of her education and information. If she has no education, she's not asking you any information, you may not want to sit in that chair. A lot of the stylists just want to do hair. They don't care about if you're eating enough drinking alkaline water.
Okay.
Alkaline food.
Okay.
They don't care. Think more, be educated. The third thing is to not do a style. Don't go to a stylist saying, this is what I want, because there are not a lot of ethical stylists out there. If you come with your hair already sparse and thinning and balding in places and say, oh, I want to get some box braids today.
Yeah. Because that's what we do. That's what we do. Oh my gosh, that's just great. That's great. Okay, let's do maybe one more step and then we'll move on. After, okay, don't go and say, well, bringing a picture and all like that, this is what I want. Don't do that. So instead of not doing that, what is the attitude client should have?
Making sure that you do your research about the people that you want to touch your hair. Get your own training. Come and learn how to work with your own hair.
Okay.
Don't work of your hair like you do. You know, the grandparents used to always say, watch who touches your hair. This is a multi-trillion dollar industry, and we need more healers in the industry to help our people rid, the alopecia epidemic, the attraction alopecia epidemic, because it's an epidemic. But we don't have enough educators and hair healers out there to really solve these issues.
Very good. Very good. Okay. Okay. Now, I want to switch gears at this point and talk about the books. Audience, now, we're not only are we talking about a pioneer and a guru in cultural hair styling and braiding, but she also writes books about this subject. So I hope you have some copies of your books. And let's start with the first one you did. Let's see if we can go in chronological. What's the first book you wrote, and tell us about it?
This is the book I am really pushing right now, Stolen Crown.
Stolen Crown.
And this book is my Bible for all my classes, everything I'm doing in the Institution of Ancestral Braiding. The Institute of Ancestral Braiding is from this book. It was dedicated to a client that committed suicide because a licensed cosmetologist took her hair out. And it's their true hair stories that I have been gathering over the last 25 years. These
wow.
are young people.
Wow.
These are hair stories that people talk about. You know, they have the same feeling. They wanted to just not live because they didn't have hair. How important their hair was. The products that they used that didn't work. This book will help you to understand and to gain a really strong blueprint on how you want to move forward on healing through the hair and growing your hair and keeping moisture and oils retained into your scalp, in your strands. This book also talks about recipes you can use,
okay.
Different eating habits you can start to, you know, attach yourself to.
Okay.
I don't like to be too pushy, but, you know, it will teach you how to see things totally different as it relates to your crown.
Okay.
This is a beautiful book. They're true hair stories, black hair stories, and I think people walk away feeling totally brand new.
Okay, I want to ask you this. Okay, now, you finished and released that book roughly around when was it?
It was last year. I'm going to say around November.
Okay, so 2021, roughly somewhere in that, about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, when did you find the time to write this book? Kind of tell us about
it. It's so beautiful because I was doing this the whole time I was in litigation and in my, you know, on the front line with state detectives.
Oh, my gosh.
I started doing this, the natural rate. I just started being busy so that I wouldn't be so sad about what was happening to me and my five children. So I put this book together. Every time I would have someone sit in the chair, I would ask the story.
Oh.
It's time to direct you. Let me hear your story.
Okay.
And so I would gather those stories, and I kept them, and then I say, okay, we are free now. As of 2016, it's time to do the story.
Oh,
it's
my God.
It's time to write again.
Okay.
And you can find it on Amazon.
Well, go ahead, because that was going to be part of my questions. But since you're talking about it, let's go ahead and tell the audience with that one, how can they get it? How can they get that book?
You can get the book in Dallas at 17290 Preston. 206 is the suite number. You can also get it off of Amazon anytime. And I also have it in Atlanta.
Okay, so, now we're going to put somewhere in the chat, but say, slow down a bit and give that address where they can physically go and get it. And we'll put it somewhere in the chat. Go ahead and say it again.
17290 Preston
Bowe. Okay. Suite 204. Okay, we'll put that in the chat. So audience, that's where you can go and physically get the book. Now, tell me the entire title again. What's the entire title?
Stolen Crown, Black Hair Stories, 400 Years Later.
Oh.
400 Years Later. This is what we've been going through. The Crown Act is nothing new to our ancestors.
Okay, let me jump in. And I'm so glad you pivoting there, because I wanted to ask you, why is our hair so important, and how did we begin to think of it as a crown, because that is exactly what it is. Tell us a little ancestral history about that.
We always knew it was a crown. Ancient history is rising again. There's a shift on the planet right now. We are now coming out of the dirt and coming up and grabbing our crowns and putting them back on. It's always been understood. Black oppressed slaves in the country. So it was just the father's voice here. The mother back in the day knew that they could sneak and use leftover dishwater liquid just to moisturize their hair. They had to do it in hiding. So it's always been a crown. It was a crown from day one when they went over and saw, oh my God, what beautiful, beautiful people. And they apprehended us from our crowns. We had hair, so, and grace and beautiful crowns. And that's how they were able to drag us into their whole matrix. It's okay that we're just waking up, but wake up. We gotta understand it's more than a style. It's more than a crown you put on. Just because you're black, don't mean you got soul. Just because you are wearing a crown, don't mean you're walking in integrity. Doesn't mean that your morality and your character is divine.
Okay.
You have to claim the goodness that God has given us with our crowns being different, spiraling like our DNA, spiraling like everything on the planet. We are so crown given, and the crown we wear, we should never take it off. We should always know that it is a gift from God.
Oh, my gosh. You you touch my heart. You touch my spirit. Okay, now, there are other books. I don't know if you have copies of, or you can just tell us about some of them, others that you've done.
Thank you for mentioning. I do a book dedicated to my ancestors. I know that we are here because of our ancestors, so I wanted to do something in the light and in the spirit of my ancestors. So I did all these beautiful pictures of me. It's a pictorial book. It's a picture book. All these different phases of my life, from when I was young and Dana to when I became Isis.
Okay.
It's a beautiful book and people love it. But the other book is going to be coming out really soon. It's two more, but it's so much going on.
Right.
My book, Isis Brantley, the state of Texas versus Isis Brantley.
Wait a minute. Hold on. So you are going to do a book about that whole legal battle with the state of Texas. So you're working on that now?
Yes, it's already completed, but we're fine-tuning a lot of different other chapters that we want to sound different. But yes, that book is coming out. I have a children's book dedicated to my 27-year-old Ola Yinka. Ola Yinka's nappy hair and the African beaded comb. So we talk about the comb. The comb didn't follow us here to these, you know, shores over here in the diaspora. So the comb was a sacred comb and a sacred mirror that Ola Yinka's mother taught her about. And it just teaches the children about their hair experiences, loving their hair, using their fingers to adorn their hair, and making sure that every time they speak about their hair, they're speaking beauty and love and light and God energy over their hair. So it talks about that she goes all over the world and gather all these children together, and she teaches them about loving their hair. She apologizes to the spirit of the mirror because we forgot to take a look in the mirror. With all the problems that we have, we are not shadowing the mirror. We are still stuck in the past. But when you look in the mirror, you that's why we look in the mirror, because you want to fix this.
Right, right. Know, so that's fascinating to me that during that whole 20-year episode with the state of Texas and you going through all kind of different phases, during all of that you were working on this book, and then you talked about the book, about the pictorial book showing the different phases of your life, and then you talked about the children's book and the comb. So do you describe all of those writing experiences? Would you say they came naturally? Was you say it was a struggle?
It's natural. All you gotta do is tell a story.
Okay. Okay.
It came so natural. It's an easy read. It's so easy to understand. What we're trying to understand is how to stop losing our hair. What we're trying to understand is how to combat anxiety, mental trauma, how to live this life and not let this life live us.
Okay.
Simple things with life, and that's all I want to bring is that you just do 1, 2, 3, and that's it. It's magical. It's
Okay. Now, I do want you to go back a little bit and talk to us about young Isis and that whole journey that which you show pictorially in the book. But what would you say are some highlights of your personal journey? What would you say are some highlights?
Oh, boy, some of the highlights of my personal journey. My personal journey when I left my mother's house.
Okay.
And saw from world. Was very young and we were very, very secluded. You know, we didn't go over the track.
Okay, so what part of Dallas were your early years?
South Dallas.
Okay.
Hey, Sean.
So then you left home. And so when you first left home, what was on your mind? I mean, did you have some direction or did you just say, I'm going out there and find what's going on? Did you have some direction?
So what world I was in? I think I was in back in the I Dream of Beanie world. Because that's how I wore my hair, too. But I had no revolutionary thoughts, nothing about justice. My mother never let us see the ugly side of racism. She never showed us that ugly side. So when I got it out into the world and went to North Texas State University, I was like, my God, she's not free. I just assume I was privileged. You know, I just the case. I couldn't even wear natural hair there. I did a whole thing with women there and had them all go natural and did their hair and taught them how to do hair.
Okay.
That got my revolutionary wings.
Okay.
That things was nothing like how I grew up. I grew up with white dolls. I never had a black doll. When I started seeing the revolution,
okay,
going on even Soul Train and sisters with their hair all long.
Okay, okay.
Oh my God.
Okay, now let's skip to when you actually started to think of ancestral braiding as a career or as a craft. You know, when did you... A money maker, I guess we can say.
Oh, God, I'm trying to make this really quickly. So I met this brother while I was in college, and he was like, you should braid people's hair. I was like, okay. So he said, let's just drop out of college. You don't need to be in theater and drama and do all that. You need to do your passion. And I believed in him, so I followed him.
Okay.
He would go around in the neighborhood. He was from East Dallas.
Okay.
That empty apartment, and I would set up in those apartments or houses and start braiding people's hair. That's how revolutionary this whole braiding thing started for me. He was like, they love you, you gotta go out with people. I said, but I can't be going to empty apartments. I don't know. I'm trying to be a crook and go to jail. I grew into we got together and then we got a space, and that space was right there at right across the street from Lincoln High School. I remember it just as clear as day. I was named the Queen of Braids in Dallas.
Okay, you had let's see if the audience heard that you on this journey. Now there you are. You opened that establishment, hair braiding establishment, right across the street from Lincoln High School. And now listen, tell us. And I know we are kind of in the winding down phase here, but you by then you had some kind of a prominent clients, I think, did you not?
Oh, Shirley MacFadder, you name them. The lady, oh my God, I wish I can remember.
Well, you know, those names leave us. Those names leave us. But what was her profession? Was she?
Yes, Erica Baidu. But, yep. Well, long before Erica Baidu. interview with a whole lot of other famous people. I got a chance to be, I chose not to do Stevie Wonder's hair, but I got a chance to be with him and show them what I could do. But I saw that they were already pulling his hair out, whatever stylist it was beautiful. But he was, that was his first stages of alopecia.
Okay.
But a lot of prominent people came. You know, the Merlin Clark, Diane Ragsdale.
Yeah.
I mean, you name it.
Right.
Okay.
Very good, very good. Okay, now let's move in our last 10 minutes or so. You moved to different sites, and your prominence still was expanding.
Okay.
Now I'm just going to throw in here real quickly that you led different cultural ceremonies, for lack of a better term, during the solstice, the winter solstice. You did different community culturally oriented activities. Throw in just a little bit about that on how you got into that.
Because I think the hair is very sacred and spiritual, and it's the spirit where God lives. I do everything spiritual. I wanted to cleanse away a lot of the Confederacy in the cemeteries that we go to, right across from my auntie, the cemetery that is a female Confederacy. I forget what they call themselves, but they have a lot of issues going on in the community. There's a lot of mental illness. There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of stress going on. So I wanted to do my sponging. I do a lot of spiritual work at the river. I take where I am, I give praise and thanks to water, because I know that water, I hear, if we don't get the water, it will die eventually. If we don't drink water, the same will happen to us. So the mother of the water, or the spirit of water, I give praise to that. I give praise and thanks to everything with children. So I do a lot of different parties with children to honor children, to lift them up. It is very important that we continue to show the love. The love revolution is very strong on the planet.
See, I don't think we have gotten a lot of that knowledge publicly. So what? So if people want to do party planning for their children, I mean, is that okay?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, so the public can contact you if they want to do cultural parties for their children.
That's right. Absolutely. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes.
Now let's bring to current day. Where are you currently now? You have a training school, for lack of a better term, and a salon. So kind of bring us currently, where are you? What all is going on at your site? Tell us.
I'm having a class on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's a natural hair class and a lock tightening class. I'm located on Preston and Campbell, 17290 Preston, Suite 206. And we are always there with just an open heart to talk about hair. I do a lot of consultations for people that are losing their hair. They have several consultations. The ladies that are going to be taking the classes will also learn about consultations, also learn about touching the hair without using a comb. I have a lot of biracial families that are coming to the institute because we're teaching them how to untangle their children's hair without using heavy products from over the counter. And we're teaching these kids also how to make their own products that's conducive and compatible to their own.
Now let me understand this. So at this during these teaching sessions, it's not that you have to be expecting to go into hair care professionally. What am I understanding that women who just want to improve themselves? Tell us about that.
Yes, so I have a kids camp, crown camp, that I do every year, and basically we just teach the children how to work with their own.
But what about the adult women who aren't necessarily?
The adults are always welcome to come. I have a lot of parents that want to bring their daughters, so the mom and me kind of programs.
Okay. So there is sort of a division of it where it's like mom and me, the mom and the child can.
That's right. I even have a father and me kind of workshop teaching the fathers how to work with their children here, because a lot of them are parenting young girls.
Oh, so great. Okay, now let's see. So to wrap up, let's see. Oh, yes, I did want to bring this in. you have a line of hair care cultural products. Tell us about your what is that line called, and how do we get that?
It's Sisters of Isis, and you can get them online, naturallyisis.com, through the website, or you can go to the salon, 17290 Preston, and that's Suite 206, or you can catch me at any festival. I'm on my way to Houston to a big D5 festival, and I'm doing a meet and greet at a Black bookstore, Stony Black area. It's really like a Black beauty supply, and I'm doing meet and greet there. So I always have the products with me. I always have the books with me, but you can always get it online, naturally.com.
Very good. Okay, I think we're going to close out with that. I'm overflowing. I'm overflowing with enthusiasm for all that you do, all that you have accomplished, and what a value you are to our community. And as you say, multiculturally, our African ancestry is blessed by you, but you're spreading it abroad, and we love you. We appreciate you. Isis, everybody, and she mentioned her website. Say that website one more time.
NaturallyIsis.com.
NaturallyIsis, that's I-S-I-S, NaturallyIsis.com. And the address of your location, 17290 Preston Road. And what's the suite number?
206.
206. So, y'all, go and embrace her, and when you go, give her a hug from me. All right, thank you. Thank you so much. All right, bye-bye. Okay. All right, everybody, that was Isis. I think we're going to take a little break here, and let's see. Okay. All right, everybody, we're going to take a break. And I will be back. Let's see if I can do this. Let me try something here. Okay. Let's see. Let me see if I can put on some music here, hopefully. Okay. Yeah. Listen to a little music and I will return.
Singing a song to you. You taught me precious secrets of a true love, holding nothing. You came out in front when I was hiding. Listen to the melody, 'cause my love is in there hiding.
Is Mama?
Okay, everybody, I'm going to sign off, and I shall return in a little bit. Okay, can you hear me, Barbara? Okay, can you hear me? Oh, wait a minute. Can you... Oh.
Okay,
all right. Yeah, now I'm going to open a new thing.
Create a broadcast,
and then Texas Metro News. Okay,
right.
Now I need to do the, I was just thinking,
yeah,
that in there.
You don't even have to put a whole description
okay.
in there. Don't worry about that. We'll just get to it.
Just a second, I'm getting this in here. Okay, now, schedule.
Description, just put the lady.
Okay, I got all that. Now, I'm going to say schedule for later.
Schedule for as soon as you can. So,
okay.
If you want, if it'll say go live now, do that.
Okay. June 6th. And then the time,
12 o'clock, yeah. Try 12 o'clock.
Okay, 12, yeah, because I think that's the closest I can get, 12.
Yeah.
And then that's p.m., okay. Okay, now create broadcast.
Yeah.
Create broadcast.
Now, if that sign pumps up there again, that description,
okay,
click on it.
Okay, so it's not letting me do 12, so I guess I'll have to do
12.
Well, let me try 12.
Or 12:05.
Let me try 12:05. Okay, now it says, StreamYard has lost access to your Facebook account. Click here to reconnect.
Click there. Click there, Ms. Norma.
Okay. All right. So I clicked it. Okay. So I guess it did okay.
Okay.
Okay. Now create broadcast. At least 10 minutes. So let me try 12:10.
Yeah.
12:10. Okay. Now create broadcast. It looks like it's doing it. Okay. Now let me do. Now do I need to?
Yeah. So you take that link and send that to your next lady, Miss Lee.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Tell her you have a new link. You don't have to say anything else. Just say I've got a new link.
And send it to you. I'll send it to you also.
You can send it to me if you want to,
okay.
But that's how I knew what was going on is because I had the link, and I was
okay.
in the back, I was in the studio, I blocked myself out. I didn't want you to let me in. I was just, you know, monitoring it.
Okay, now compose, paste.
You should be playing a song. I'm going to play one.
Okay, thank you. Okay, now, let's see. Thank you. Okay, now I'm going to call her, Marv. I'm going to hang up and call her then. Well, let me call her. Let me open my. Well, no, no, no. Go back to your email. You got to click on a different link. I just sent a new link. So. Okay. And then go ahead and do everything that you would have done on that with that new link.
Okay. Allow Mike and Pam access.
Mm-hmm. All right. And so I'm going to hang up, and then I'll go back to mine. All right. Yes, please. All right. Okay, she said she's got it and she's hitting it. So now I'm going to go back to StreamYard,
yeah,
right?
Go back to StreamYard.
Okay. Back to StreamYard. Inner Studio. Testing, testing. Okay, everybody, I'm back, and we had to take care of a little technical situation there, so I'm going to go ahead and bring in our guest. Can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me? You can?
Yes.
Very good, very good. Okay. All righty, everybody, let me tell you who we have here. Again, we're so happy to welcome back a previous guest. And this, everybody, is Libby Lee. Some of her old classmates from Dallas may remember her as Libby Terrell, but I'm going to call her Libby Terrell Lee. But she's known today as Libby Lee, and she is an independent corporate and nonprofit executive. She does also staff training, and she is a consultant. Now, she is also executive director, what is called the Golden seeds, and each alphabet in seeds, S-E-E-D-S, stands for a word, and I'll just tell you what it is. It's sowing, that's the S, and then one E is encouragement, the next E is empowerment, and then the D is development. For the spirit of our community. That's Golden Seeds. And it's a foundation at Golden Gate Baptist Church. Now, you catch the link there, Golden Gate Baptist Church and Golden Seeds. And this is in the Oak Cliff area. And Libby Lee is going to give us an update on a lot of stuff that's going on in the community around that Golden Gate Church. And it's right there near the Yvonne Ewell Townview Magnet School, right there in that community where Yvonne Ewell Townview School is. So she's going to tell us, and the last time she was here, there were some initiatives that were going on, and some things have moved forward and moved up and moved forward, and we're going to hear all about that. And I'll just go ahead and tell you that community, a lot of us, and I'm also a native Dallasite, so a lot of us native Dallasites know that area as the Bottom, B-O-T-T-O-M. She's going to tell us all about that. And so that's the 8th Street. As we know, Yvonne Ewell School is located on 8th Street, so that's the 8th Street community near Highway 67 and what have you. So, hello, how are you doing?
Well, I'm good. Thank you so much for having me back. Wow. Yeah. It's good to have to come. You know, when somebody asks you to come back, it means that...
It means you didn't mess up the first time.
On, right?
You did not mess up the first time. So,
right.
And that is exactly right. When we left that door open, we were waiting on you to hurry up and step back in it. So,
good deal.
I should have got some water while I was out checking on the technical stuff. But let's begin with a slight review of that area we're talking about, and it's called The Bottom. Tell us about that area. What's your understanding of how that name came about?
Well, it's exactly what it is.
Okay.
It is the Trinity, and back when, and it is actually historically a slave resettlement community.
See, now, you know, let me jump right in there, because with all of the history that we hear about the Bottom, I think we lose that little part of history. We lose that. So go ahead and tell us more about that.
Well, at one point, it was the Bottom. It was the 10th Street Bottom.
Okay.
10th Street is a designated historical district in the city.
Okay. Okay.
And many of the placards and recognition for it being what it is located in 10th Street.
Okay.
The challenge with, and we were not compelled to stay linked to 10th Street, and so we just determined that it was better for 10th Street to have their recognition and the Bottom do their own, because historical districts historically impede.
Okay, now let me get that, and again, all of this is just so key. So,
mm-hmm.
So audience, when you hear the 10th Street Historical District, it's a little different from the Bottom. And Libby Lee is telling us that when they were deciding their work in those areas, they decided not to try to lump it all together, but that they would allow the 10th Street Historic Area to have its identity, and then the Bottom would have its identity. So, but it's all kind of near the Trinity Rivers sort of area, right?
Right, exactly. And
so, but now I want to ask you to go ahead and tell us about the significance of the Trinity River for those two areas, both the Bottom and 10th Street. Why is the the Trinity River significant there?
Well, that's probably above my capacity to understand. I would never be able to understand what it is or why it is that these slavery settlements in many communities are located around water.
Yeah, yeah.
Around those places.
Right, right.
But that's exactly what happened. When you think about many of the other areas, there is the University of Texas at Arlington did an amazing documentary on the Dallas-Fort Worth locations, because I told you, Joppe is one of those communities,
right?
As well.
Yeah.
That is recognized as a slavery settlement. And in Dallas, the bottom was one. They did include some aspects of 10th Street. There was one in Arlington. There's a couple in Fort Worth. I really, at one point, would like to share that that graduate study that they did.
Yeah, yeah.
Included all of these communities, because it really is worthy of knowing the history. It is so much. It is so hard to unpack, and we could never do it in an hour.
And I'm even thinking of, oh gosh, I'm blanking out on where the Bill Blair Park is down there.
Absolutely.
Bonton. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, Bonton was not considered. Uh-huh. They weren't in that particular study area.
Okay.
But
mm-hmm.
It was still very fascinating. And so to answer the question about, you know, slavery settlement, land is easy. You can go and it's where they just put everyone... Who was coming into Dallas? That's what they settled.
But you know what? And I'm also wondering. Deep Ellum. I don't think that's water. Deep Ellum.
No, you're thinking Ellum
Fitches,
right?
Okay, maybe that's the one.
By St. Paul.
Okay.
St. Paul.
I don't know if that's water. That might not be water related. I don't know.
No. You know, there are places throughout Dallas where people just simply settled.
Yeah, well, see, that's the point I'm trying to get to. I'm wondering if the formerly enslaved people gathered themselves by the water because they had access to water. I mean, I don't know.
You know, that part of history I have not pursued to discover, but it's interesting. I believe there's so much information that was captured in this docuseries that those students did at the University of Texas.
I'm so happy to hear about that study. Roughly, what's your memory of roughly when that study might have been done? Last 10 years?
It was last summer.
Get out of here.
It's very current.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. You got to get that study and share it with us. That's fascinating. That's fascinating.
I will do that.
Okay.
I will invite some of the faculty and the students.
Oh, please do. Please, please. Oh, my gosh. I'm excited again. I'm excited again. Okay. Now, so link us to Golden Gate Baptist Church and its significance to the bottom. How is that linked there?
Well, Golden Gate is a 93-year-old church.
Okay.
It's been in that community that long.
Okay.
And so many of the members and many of the things that the church from its origin was just simply located. That is the only location that we have, that the church has ever established.
Now that's a mouthful right there, because you know, we as congregations, we move around. So that,
let me tell you what,
go ahead.
The reason all of this stuff happened was because if you ever have the occasion to go into the community and you just turn around and face downtown Dallas,
yeah.
By far the most impressive view of downtown Dallas anywhere in the city. You see the entire skyline. It is an amazing view, and it is because it is an amazing view.
Uh-huh.
It has been such an undeveloped location, and it is accessible, and it has been the best kept secret in Dallas County. We determined as a membership, as a group, that you know, get ourselves organized in such a way that we will be at the table when something starts to happen.
Okay. Okay.
The numbers were coming down, and people were interested in property that was dirt cheap that had just simply been neglected for so long. That it became increasingly necessary to protect the community for its origin and for the way it had evolved over the years, and the better word is probably survived over the years.
Okay.
You know, because it has been neglected for so long. Mm. It used to thrive. When I was a younger, much younger child attending the church, I've been at the church all my life. And
okay.
So when I can recall houses and stores and there was fellowship, people were playing around the parks, and you know, for a long time, Norma, it just went, it was like, who's coming down? It was the place where people could drive through at night and dump trash.
Oh.
And it would stay there because we didn't have the level of city services that others see in other parts of the community.
Wow.
And so it just was, I don't want to know, I don't even want to think, give thought to what might have been the undercurrent reason for the neglect. But it did occur.
Mm.
And so you've got to have enough.
Yeah.
And that's where we were.
Okay, give us the period of time maybe when the church said, like you just said, you're a life member of the church, and you can remember in your own head where some of the membership or the leadership said some things are going to happen or beginning to happen. We need to be in on the ground floor when this, am I describing that correctly?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right.
You know, the current pastor, Pastor C.B.T. Smith, who was there for 40-plus years, and in the transition to the current pastor, who, by the way, is celebrating 25 years at the leadership role this weekend.
Get out!
Yeah, it's been 25 for him.
Okay.
That he was getting calls. He
okay.
was getting inquiries continually around accessing the church's building.
Okay.
You know, let's want to sell.
Okay.
Want to sell to move.
Okay.
Want to do this. And his position was absolutely not.
Right.
We're gonna stay here. We're gonna stay here to ensure that the people who are here who want to remain here can remain here just like us.
Right.
Very easy. If you think about Dallas and Hamilton Park, how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
people went into Hamilton Park. Texas Instruments went in. And because it's just a prime location, and that happens to us so often as a community, when we establish our place and where we want to be, it becomes appealing, and then the people with money come in and want to do something different, and recognize that's what the bottom represented. It truly represented that, and you really had to have a heart to want to stay and make it work and revive it again and bring it back to its appeal, because there is nothing else. There's no other location in Dallas.
Yeah.
Like it.
And that I caught it. That spoke to me when you said you have to have a heart to want to stay. And so when, I'm sorry, the current pastor,
Parker.
When Pastor Parker started getting all these inquiries, you want to sell? First of all, that should have turned on some kind of light. But well, wait a minute, if all these people want to buy, it must be something of value here that they want. And so, but there was both heart in it and intelligence and business savvy actually as well.
Right. Yeah. And let me tell you some history about that.
Go ahead.
He's from Washington, D.C. His family lived, he describes, just right down the street from the United States Capitol.
Wow.
And he worships there with his family. And when he goes back now, there are only townhouses and high rents because the people have been
have been replaced.
Yeah, they've totally been displaced.
Yeah.
He didn't want to see that happen. When you're near a hub where everything is going on, developers want to be able to generate revenue that fills their pockets, to the exclusion of a lot of people, and it's unfortunate.
Mm.
But you know, you just gotta be, woke.
Yeah. This is the free enterprise system in America, and that's what we do.
That's what we do.
That was about what period of time, roughly, when all of these inquiries kind of started escalating?
Well, it started I'm certain that it began about the time that he came up.
So it would have been roughly 25 years ago. Roughly 25 years ago. Okay.
So we actually established the Golden Seed Foundation in 2004, but there had been a number of times that we just simply wanted to organize it and get it structured in such a way that we were viable and to truly be in a conversation.
Now, I want to put you in the mix there. So there you were, a life member, and you grew up under Pastor C.B.T. Smith, which is an iconic name in local African American history. So you grew up under him. Then Pastor is Vincent, right? Vincent Parker came in 25 years ago. So how did you personally? I mean, did you volunteer? Did somebody twist your arm? How did that come about?
We're not what we call the silk stocking church.
Okay.
We're just a thick sock church.
Okay.
And so there are those of us who are there who have capacity and ability and know. And so you just kind of get tapped here, you get tapped there, and you just kind of come together. I knew about establishing business organizations, nonprofit organizations, and so I just volunteered and was volunteered to go in and do that. And so you make the first application, and I had already established my own private consulting company back in 2000. And so I knew the steps that were required to get your DBA and then go and do the state, the Secretary of State, and that, you know, the next step is federal designation. So, you know, all of those things I did on behalf of the church. And so we did get established in 2004.
Okay. Okay.
With he and one other and myself as the organizers.
Okay.
And,
okay.
You know, our names are on the document. And so I started out really not as the ED, but just as someone that wanted to keep it straight, knew how to make sure you file those papers, so that the IRS does not cut you off, because you have to do the things that have to be done.
Okay.
And so that's really been my role, and Norma, I'd love to be retired today, but you know I am working harder today than I was some 25, 30 years
ago. Oh my gosh. Well, let's go ahead and bring COVID into the mix. Now, you know, like you said, your plate already was full, and then here comes COVID, and naturally, you know, it shut so much stuff down. How did the church begin to pick itself back up with this project after COVID?
Well, you know, we never stopped.
Great.
Before, I'm at my house right now working. Everything I had at my office moved over here.
Okay.
Now I work here and the office. But during COVID, you know, the things that were needed around the community continued.
Okay.
And they were, there was continually a request for services, for food.
Okay.
You know, when people were not working, that,
okay.
that rent offset and the things. That, and so I'm writing grants. I'm getting money. We are responding, and we have a continued response to the community, not just to the bottom, but, you know, we opened up to anyone who could come in, who needed food, who needed whatever. And we, of course, went online. The church did. We had our community meetings via the online platform.
Uh-huh.
And so we just never did stop. We had received a couple of awards from the city of Dallas.
Okay.
By way of the councilwoman, Carolyn King Arnold, who endorsed who agreed that we could receive what we did.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, we received a $500,000 grant to do, reimbursement grant to do a beautification for the community, because, again, you know, the community itself had been neglected, and so there were things that needed to be done.
Okay, let me rattle off some of the now. And by the way, anyone who wants to know more about the Golden Seeds Foundation, you can go on online on social media, and it'll give you all the background about it. But some of the aspects that, okay, you there's according to your different divisions. Home ownership programs, new construction. Then you have workshops and training about financial education. And then you also do equitable development where you collaborate with the organizations for equitable development. You just mentioned about the beautification. That was a grant from the city of Dallas. And then you also are working on something called a community garden. I don't know if that has started yet or what, but those are some. And then you do the food sharing helping people, point them how to get help with rent, all of that kind of thing. So those, every one of those aspects of your work are quite vital. So when you look at that whole breakdown, what's your interpretation on maybe what you think is just absolute necessary? I'm sure all of it's necessary, but how would you line up those different aspects of what Golden Seeds does?
Right. So during COVID, we did take the lead on food distribution.
Okay.
But the church itself has a food share ministry.
Okay.
And so once things kind of open back up, I pass that back to the church for them to do it. And now they do that twice a month.
Okay.
On the first Tuesday and the third Tuesday. And if there's a fifth Tuesday, they will do it on the fifth Tuesday of the month.
Okay.
From 10:30 to 12:30.
Okay.
So that's where the food distribution is. And it's not limited to the zip codes and that kind of thing.
So okay.
Who would need food can certainly come by the church on those Tuesdays, the first.
And I guess we should give the address. I guess we should give the address of the church.
Mm-hmm. That's 1101.
Okay.
Reverend CBT Smith Street.
Okay. Okay. And it formerly... Okay, and it formerly was what was the name of that street before?
Sabine.
Okay, so old timers might remember it as Sabine, and then it was renamed. And so, what roughly when was that street renamed?
Let's see.
Oh gosh. Was it early 2000? Was it as early as 2000 after?
I'm thinking more mid.
We'll say around the mid 2000s. It was renamed, but it's the old Sabine Street, which is now renamed Reverend CBT Smith. And I think it was shortly after he transitioned to become an ancestor because I was at the renaming ceremony. I was there, but don't ask me when that was. But it was shortly after his transition that the street was, he was honored with the street being renamed. Okay, so we were talking about the different aspects of the project. Now, the beautification, what comes under that? What comes under that?
It is, there are things that we take for granted.
Okay.
That simply don't exist.
Okay.
Lights, pedestrian lights.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right? And you know, lighting is should be an infrastructure initiative by the city.
Okay.
And the city of Dallas did use some of the Build Back Better dollars that came through to do that on Bentley Drive.
Okay.
But, you know, the residents, when we had a community meeting, we asked before COVID, what are your priorities?
Okay.
What is it that you want to see down here? Well,
okay.
The very first thing that they talked about was cleanup. Well, you know, you can't use that money for cleaning up.
Okay.
We have to do that ourselves.
Okay.
We all have to put in and do that.
Okay.
So let's go next. What's next? And so the next preference was lighting.
Yeah.
And then landscaping.
Okay.
You know, the bottom. Now, let me stop just a minute and say it is now referred to as the Bottom District. Thank you very much.
Okay.
It's officially the Bottom District.
Okay.
We're putting up sign toppers on fancy poles.
Okay.
So we'll have our own designation.
Okay.
On all of our streets in the bottom. It's the Bottom District.
Okay. All right.
As we move into this arena of being a district, not just a community.
Okay. Okay.
But, you know, once they determined life was the thing, the next thing was about landscaping and just things around community that makes it community. So we're going to put out, we're doing trash cans, really, you know, those kinds that are big and nice and they look good. And, they put down the city of Dallas in 2020, redid Denley Drive, put sidewalks down, redid the street, improved the underground infrastructure. They're now doing it for three other streets there to get started before the end of the summer.
Okay.
And every street is on point to be improved thanks to the planning or the identification. I'm not sure who's doing it, but whoever is doing it at the city, be that T.C. Broadnax
or
the others there, that kind of thing is happening.
Now, I want to know. So, you know, a lot of times, well, I should say sometimes, you can, you know, do things to help people. And where I'm going with this question is sometimes people just kind of, you do stuff and they just, it's like, you should have done it anyway. So I guess what I'm trying to ask, how has the community responded? I mean, do they seem grateful? I mean, are they just taking you for granted? What's going on there?
Well, you know, Norma, that's such a good question. It really is. It has not been easy.
Okay.
Because, you know, when you have been allowed to do your own thing the way you have done it for a long time.
Yeah.
And then other people start coming in and changing up the way.
Right.
It is irritating and it's difficult sometimes.
Yeah.
But you can't push me away.
Uh-huh.
I haven't lived there, but I've grown up there.
Right.
I have seen what it was. And there's so many opportunities just to kind of hide and do shady things there.
Oh.
We have run into squatters. We have run into people that encroached upon property that we need to build another piece of property. And so, it's never easy. My saying has become that you can't make this stuff up. You really cannot make this stuff up.
But you wouldn't think about that. Just the average person driving through, you just, you wouldn't think about peeling away the layers and really seeing what's going on, you know, like, as you said, squatters. I mean, who would think of that, you know?
They were there.
Wow.
They were there, and in a major, major way.
Oh,
and
wow.
So they're gone now. But, you know, that doesn't mean that the whole, that the community has totally embraced, except I read, we started construction on two houses on Denley Drive,
uh-huh.
and we went in and started clearing out the brush,
okay,
to make it ready for the foundation.
Yeah.
And a gentleman who, right before we were going to do that, my associate was going by knocking on the door.
Yeah.
Pastor Popper had just informed the neighbors that, you know, we want to let you know what we're going to be doing.
Right.
We're going to be praying over this ground on
right.
Sunday.
Right.
We don't want you to think that we're going to push you out of the way.
Exactly.
They never did answer the door.
Uh-huh.
They never answered the door.
Okay.
And it was quite concerning because you saw a car in the yard. You knew that. But long story, a shorter story, is that we did that on Monday.
Uh-huh.
So they came through, took out all the brush. And I tell you that I got a call at the office that from the person who lived in the house that we had not, whose house we had knocked on for
right,
and saying, thank you. I really needed that all that brush moved.
Yeah.
And I am so grateful, and I'm grateful for what you guys are doing with the lights and the sidewalk. And it's like, okay, that made it better.
I know it did. It made me better just hearing that. First of all, it makes you, it uplifts you, because people don't have to say thank you. People don't have to acknowledge what good things you do. So I take my hat off to that person for making the effort, picked up the phone, dialed the phone number, and said thank you, and acknowledged that they saw the good that you did. That's uplifting.
Your taxes are going up.
Okay.
Taxes are going up.
Okay.
And the fear, the thing that keeps me up at night, I know I said it the last time, is that, you know, that's how gentrification begins, and we have simply not been able to get the state legislature. This is not a city of Dallas issue. This is a state issue that you at least abate the taxes for those who are present before you raise them, but the property in the area has skyrocketed.
Wow.
Skyrocketed.
Wow.
We're looking at affordability that looks anywhere from $200,000 to $240,000 for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, 1-car garage.
Compared to maybe back when it was like what? It during what? Wow. Wow.
165. That's when we signed the agreement, it was 165 to 195.
And oh, my gosh.
Wow. 1,300 square foot, maybe it's 1,700. It's now at a ceiling. But that's to build. That's to purchase. That's referred to as affordable now.
Oh, my gosh.
And taxes are going up.
Yeah.
Taxes are going up. Yeah. You know, you see your own taxes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And if they had been able to abate, a couple of years even before it began, and before COVID, with everyone being informed about what was about to happen, property taxes went up from $7,500 per space to $15,000.
Wow.
So when you saw that, it's like, uh-oh, this thing is getting ready to get out of hand. Mm. And it was even before the first piece of dirt was moved.
Wow.
And so I know we're going to lose. We're going to lose some people. And so we're trying to do the things that I'm trying to do the things and see this to ensure that those those who want to remain.
Yeah.
Okay,
now so, speaking of losing people, I want to ask about, because again, I can imagine, and I think we touched on this a little bit when we had you on before, but I can imagine that these are what, existing properties, I'm assuming these are descendants of some of the original formerly enslaved folk who settled in the area. So it kind of breaks your heart that with the economic fallout, that some of the descendants whose great-grandma and all of those folks lived in those properties, they may leave, you know.
Yes, they may have to.
Yeah.
What we're seeing now are, you're right, offsprings of people who own property initially.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have that group, seniors who have accumulated some property.
Yeah, yeah.
That you know, they were intending to leave to their children.
Yeah, yeah.
That now they have to make other decisions because the property is so, the taxes are so increased. And then, you know, houses are, they're not as sturdy and as there's so much work that needs to be done.
Right. Deterioration
right.
of, and that happens to all of us. That happens to all of us. Yeah, yeah. Okay, now.
It's subject to flood. In the sense, it's not that it has not flooded since the levees were constructed.
Yeah.
It was not flooded. It
uh-huh.
has not flooded.
Uh-huh.
But water will settle, and so there are strategies that we've offered up. The city of Dallas is their watershed is looking for something that's going to be extensive. But you know, environmentally, if we just began to do trees and plants,
right,
maybe plants that are specific to the area that
uh-huh.
does not necessarily require a lot of flood mitigation,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, a lot of care.
Right.
For survivable, you can begin that the moisture can absorb,
mm-hmm.
the soil can absorb all of the rain. And the rainwater, the flooding actually does not come from the Trinity into the community. It comes from 8th Street and Corinth Street down.
Okay, now let me put a pin right there, because as you were talking about the flooding, it did make me remember, and again, I'm a Dallas person, so I remember growing up and hearing all the stories about the flooding around the Trinity River, and then I'm not remembering when the levees were built, but then the city powers and state powers did build those levees around the Trinity River, which did protect those areas, and the bottom was one of those areas, and you know, one reason why it might have been called the bottom was because it was lowland where the Trinity River used to flood. That could be. I haven't really researched, but I remember vividly the stories about the Trinity River flooding and I do remember even, and I don't remember if this was in the bottom, but I do remember there were certain areas near the Trinity where the houses were built up on stilts, so when the river would flood, the water could folks could go up, you know, high on the house and the water go under the house, so you know, all of that. But the levees at the Trinity River levees, that was a turning point in the life of the city of Dallas. So, but let me jump over here. I did want to bring this in, and I mentioned that folk could go online and look up the Golden Seeds Foundation. But when I was looking at it, I read your mission statement, and it was just so uplifting to me. I wanted to just share some of it. Let me just try this first paragraph. The mission of the Golden Seeds Foundation is to transform our neighborhood into a vibrant community through acts of justice and mercy. We seek to accomplish this through the promotion of biblical values, social justice, economic development, creating hope for the most vulnerable in our community. And then I want to move on down some. Okay, we envision a spiritual community of volunteers and workers who desire to serve with their hearts as well as their hands. We envision a community whose impact reaches far beyond our geographic boundaries and to the hearts and into the hearts and minds of people desiring a new life with new opportunities. But what we envision more than anything else is a village which shares and cares for one another. And it goes on. I love that mission statement. It makes me want to go out and join the group, you know. So I can envision the founders of the Golden Seeds Foundation. I can envision a group sitting around and actually batting out these different aspects of your mission statement. What's your feeling about this mission statement?
The thing is, the mission statement is not quite as long as you read. That other part, you probably saw may have shifted
Yeah. Now on down, it talks about it goes on.
And so that paragraph is Lizzie Lee talking.
Okay. Wait a minute. Did I hear you say you're not Superwoman? Did I hear you say you're not Superwoman?
You didn't hear it, but, you know, sometimes I get to go in here, Norma. You know, you were at the morning news. I was at the morning news a few months before you, so you got to get started here on knowing what you want to say. And again, when you started talking about envisioning this and eyes, and, oh, Lord, that was coming from a grant, probably. But it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
We do want that. We don't want this to change into a suburban, an infill suburban community.
Right.
And the houses that are going up now are two stories.
Wait a minute. Let me put a pin in there, and y'all forgive me for jumping in. But you had said something earlier, and I did want to come back to that about the housing part. So tell us about the housing part, and has it moved forward much? What's going on with that?
Well, currently there are let me set it up. The bottom was about 80% vacant.
Okay.
You had about 80% of the property, the property on in the bottom was vacant. There
okay.
Was nothing on it. No
okay.
Structure on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made property available for purchase and ownership, so that construction could occur. And
okay.
That's what's happening.
Okay.
Many of the lots are 25 feet wide.
Okay.
It's not wide now.
Okay.
Okay. And they are 100 feet deep.
Okay.
And so what you have are, what limits you are houses that either are straight through.
Okay.
We used to call them shotgun.
Shotgun houses, yes.
They're going up. And so these are two-story houses, but they are three-bedroom, they are two-bath, there's one car garage, and right now they're what we call front-loaded garages, which means that you drive up and into the garage and then go into the house up. But there's a front door, of course.
Okay.
We have proposed to the city to allow us to have detached garages.
Okay.
And let them go to the back.
Okay.
It's 100 feet deep.
Okay.
We have got that. That's going to come up later this year.
Okay.
But the houses are, we have, there's another developer in the community called Texas Heavenly Homes.
Okay.
And Alonzo Harris is a contractor who is helping construct some of those properties. But Texas Heavenly Homes is a 40-year developer who had purchased much property in the area.
Okay.
And he is the developer of Mar-a-Lago in Mansfield.
Okay.
And so he's real familiar with, you know, this is his new venture into urban, into infield.
Okay.
He's done suburban work, but he wants the community.
It's Alonzo who? Alonzo who? Okay, Alonzo Harris. Okay.
I think his company is, oh gosh.
Wait, now he's not Heavenly Homes?
He's just a contractor who works with them.
Oh, okay. I got you.
The builder who works with
them. I got you. Go on. Okay.
And, but, you know, when you are a suburban developer, there are just amenities that you see that make a community a community.
Okay.
You're going to see entryway monuments.
Okay. Okay.
That's the bottom district.
Okay.
And that will be at Colorado and East, and it will be at 8th Street and Denley Drive, and
okay.
It will be at 8th Street and Hudson.
Okay.
It's a creation of a community that you're coming into, and the light poles that will be going in. Indicative, it's consistent with what you see, and he's covering that cost himself.
Okay.
This is not a thing that the city is doing. So it's designed and intended and strategically done to create a place where people can absolutely feel comfortable. And the houses are selling. They really
are.
Now he's creating houses that's both market rate and affordable.
Okay.
Now, market rate houses are those houses that are in the $300,000 and $400,000.
Okay.
Yeah. And that will increase everything else around it.
But
it was always intended, believe it or not, for us as a foundation.
Okay.
To redo the community like it was.
Okay. You okay. Know. Now let me wrap up because we are close to wrap up time. All that means is we'll have to have you back again. Okay. So what points have we not touched on that you really want the public to know about and bring us up to date on? Is there a target date? Or are we just kind of keeping this open as a developing situation that kind of just continues on? Points that we haven't covered.
Well, to answer the last question first, yes, there is a target date. We are under, we have to have our stuff up by the end of 2023.
Okay.
So we have 24 affordable houses that we're putting up. Now,
okay.
Specific to that, if there are people, if there are listeners who would be interested in purchasing the house, again, the ceiling is right now is 240 is going to be that's considered by the city affordable. There are things that you need to go through in order to qualify for they used to call it subsidy, but now it's called home. You get money from the city to buy it down.
Okay.
Your $1,000 to buy down, and then there are mortgage lenders who would be available to help. And so, you know, if you are tired of being renting, going up. You consider becoming a home buyer.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
A homeowner.
Okay.
If the listeners would be interested in that, then you know, of course, they would just simply reach out, and we'd get you started in the process.
Okay.
For becoming pre-qualified for homeownership.
Is there a profile of a person who would kind of sort of fit eligibility? What's a little bit of a...
You know, the affordability right now is defined by the federal government, and we are building houses for people who are 80% of what's called average median income. You may hear 80% of AMI.
Okay.
Average median income.
Okay.
That it was raised, and so your base would be if your salary, family salary, is zero, meaning you at 40 in the 40,000 range.
Okay.
And I think you can earn as much as 50.
Okay.
So if you have children or you're married, then your ability to earn 80% AMI will increase.
Okay.
So talking about it, just inquiring about it, being directed to the city's website, or we can talk about it, then you can know exactly where you need to be.
Okay, the city's website would be what? Go to City of Dallas?
Yeah, it's more difficult to navigate theirs. And so I have it. We're going to upload that to our website.
Okay, now let's give us your contact information for the Seeds Foundation and how they could get to either you or someone who could help them go through this process.
My office number is 214. And all of these numbers I think are online.
Okay.
But the office number is 214-943-5010.
Okay, now that's gonna be in the chat. There it is. It's already in the chat, everybody. There is the there's the website, goldenseedscdc.org. There's the phone number. All of that's in your web, and even how to email you. L-L-E-E at goldenseedscdc.org. So public, if y'all are you're tired of renting, you want to make steps toward a home ownership that's affordable, that's all of this is information that will just be key for you. Anything else that I want to know, what do you do when you're not doing this? Any kind of hobbies you have? What?
I'm a grandma.
Wait a minute.
I'm a grandma.
That's your hobby. That's it.
I have 10. And they go from 23-year-old military grandson.
Okay.
He's almost 9 months. A 9-month-old.
What? No, stop it.
He was over yesterday, and I was pooped when he walked out of the door.
Wait a minute. I had
five in my house yesterday.
Oh, my God.
Wait a minute.
I have a friend's mother who says, and we quote her with this sometimes, she says, if at the end of the day, if you are a parent or grandparent, if you're not worn out, you're not parenting. She said, if you're not worn out at the end of the day, you're not parenting.
Okay.
So you've been grandparenting. You've been grandparenting.
I was worn out yesterday. And then they were here. And finally, when it got to be almost 9 o'clock, I thought, let's get a shower so you guys can get in your cars and go back to McKinney. And Grandma's ready. Grandma is ready. And when I woke up this morning, my oldest son, and my two granddaughters, one was on her way to Texas Tech.
Okay, okay.
They were heading out at 6 o'clock back to Spring, Texas. And I tell you what, when I locked that door and cut the light off, I thought, quiet. I haven't had quiet in 5 days.
Oh, my. Well, okay, so was part of this, what y'all do? Did y'all BBQ for 4th of July? What?
Yeah, we visited family. My nephew has a home in Grand Prairie, and everybody goes over during the summer months and swim.
Okay.
And so we were there, and then they came back over here, and we did. My husband did do that. So yeah, we just kind of hung out yesterday, and it does not help that it's so hot. You know, my backyard has for my grandchildren has a trampoline, and so they want to go get on it and come back in, but it's too hot.
Oh gosh.
And so it was just just nonstop.
Okay.
I tell you what, I'm just grateful that they were here. I enjoyed every moment, but I enjoyed more that they left.
Oh, Libby Lee, what a delight always. And like you said, when we start talking and all of these things, the time just flies. So I am so grateful for that you have updated us. We're going to stay tuned. And as you said, your target date for the project is the year 2023, and you have more than 20 homes, I believe, that you said you're aiming to build there in the area and the public. They're going to be contacting Golden Seeds Foundation and get all the information if they're interested in trying to, you know, be eligible for one of these homes. And so we're going to tune out. Thank you so much for being with us, and we will visit again.
All right. Take care. Love it.
All right. Bye-bye. Everybody, that was Libby Lee. She's a lifetime member of Golden Gate Baptist Church there in what is officially now the bottom district, but it's right behind Yvonne Ewell, Magnet School. Yvonne Ewell is on 8th Street, so there's that area, and there's so much going on. There's so much history. Oh, my gosh. So much history there, and so much now current redevelopment that's being led by Golden Gate Baptist Church, which is there on what was known as the old Sabine Street, but that was renamed CBT, renamed in honor of prominent pastor CBT Smith. And just a lot of good things going on. I do want to, in our last couple of minutes, mention that on July 14th through 16th at the AT&T Performing Arts Center at 2403 Flora Street, just north of downtown, this is called a Rhythm and Rhapsody, and it's spearheaded by Verb Culture, V-E-R-B, and culture is spelled with a K, a very common. So I looked that up online, July 14th through 16th at the AT&T Performing Center, 2403 Flora Street, which is right near the Arts Magnet, right near. And you can get your ticket at www.verbcultureevents.com or www.attpac.org. So please support that. Very talented spoken word, dancing, music, rhythm and rhapsody. Rhythm and rhapsody at the AT&T Performing Arts Center on Flora Street, July 14th through 16th. Look it up on social media. Get your tickets. She was interviewed recently on WFAA TV. So we want you to go to that. All right, everybody. Let's see if we can get out of here with a little music. Let's see if we can. Maybe not, but we're going to see if we can get here. All righty, let's see. And we wish you success for today. Wish you success for today. And we want you to wake up, everybody. We want you to wake up. Teddy Pendergrass. Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backwards thinking. It's time to think ahead, because the world has changed so very much from what it used to be. And you know it, there's so much hatred, my goodness, war, poverty.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed.
No
more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much
from
what it used to be.
Wake up.
There's so much hatred, war and poverty.
Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When